Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends, after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
We're off and rolling. New week, Monday, July 14, 2025. That is the date. Hope everybody enjoyed their weekend. But welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning99. Connor, how was your weekend?
Good. Oh, it was an amazing weekend.
Nice.
Saw Superman.
Yes. Did you letterbox it?
I did letterbox it.
Okay.
4 out of 5, full of hope. Earnestness is back, baby.
Okay.
So good. It was excellent.
Okay. Good to hear. I've heard some complaints, but I don't really jive with the complaints about Superman, but I'll leave that there. We have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. SEC Media Day started up today. Connor Dunning. Hell yeah. Greg Sankey gets up there, does his State of the Union for the SEC. I'll get to it in a second, but that signature arrogance is on full display from Greg Sankey at this particular moment. Also, we'll have some NBA and some Summer League news. Also, some LeBron news. I don't know what to make of the report that we got about a couple hours ago. 4 teams have reached out to the Lakers about trading for LeBron James. I'll tell you the team names, but do we buy that? Do we buy that there has been teams reaching out about a trade, offering packages to the Lakers?
I do buy it.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about that, discuss that. We'll talk about Cooper Flagg. We'll talk about the Grizzlies. Grizzlies made some moves over the weekend. Cole Anthony, no longer a Memphis Grizzly. Even though they did release his number last week. He was supposed to be number 25, and that's officially...
They do that for everybody.
That's over with. That's over with. He's been bought out, and it looks like he's going to land on the Milwaukee Bucks, which I kind of like the fit. But they were able to finalize some of the deals that have already been announced with getting rid of Cole Anthony.
I'd like the fit a lot more if he wasn't going to be their starter.
Sure. Sure.
But I'm talking about Dame to Cole Anthony.
Listen, I'm talking about for him.
Oh, yes. I see. Yes, for him.
Not for the Bucks. I'm talking about for him.
I see.
It's a good opportunity and fit for him.
Correct.
There we go. Hey, thank you for making me clear that up. As far as guests are concerned, we're going to have David Cobb at 5 o'clock. And then to talk some SEC Media Days, boots on the ground in Atlanta, it is Jake Crane from Crane and Company. We'll talk about the SEC. I'll do some rapid-fire questions with him, and then we'll get into the blitz right after him, and I'll answer those same rapid-fire questions about the SEC. Best team, worst team, best quarterback, all of that jazz. Now, SEC Media Days have begun, and Greg Sankey opened up his State of the SEC address with his signature arrogance. Greg, what do you think about your conference? All right, welcome to a super conference. That's how he opened his address today. While I do agree that the SEC from top to bottom in football is the best football conference, like I don't think there's any doubt. The Big Ten has gotten over top when it comes to top-end talent, But the Big Ten is very top-heavy. You have Ohio State, you have Oregon, you have Penn State, you have Michigan. Those are the teams that you look at in the Big Ten. But in the SEC, there's just more. There's more in that top 8, top 9, top 10 that can really make headway getting into an AP Top 25, getting into the college football playoff. But can I just ask this question, Connor? Has the Greg Sankey arrogance bothered you? It just continually hits us over the head, whether it's SEC spring meetings, whether it's media days, whether it's in the middle of the season, before the SEC championship. He's always, and I understand you've got to sell your conference. I also will acknowledge that the SEC sort of sells itself at this moment with all of the great brands that they have, and then adding Texas and Oklahoma to that. But am I the only one that continually gets bothered by the level of arrogance he displays every time he talks about his conference? Because it just, to me, it comes across as too much.
That, to be honest, after seeing Superman this weekend, the opening of that speech sounded very Lex Luthor-ish. You know
right,
what I mean?
Like, right.
It's I think what bothers me about Sankey sometimes is I think he is very good at what he does for his conference.
Absolutely.
What bothers me about him specifically, though, is that sometimes he acts like he doesn't have a choice to do these things.
Right.
When it's an active choice to do what he is doing to college football and college athletics. And sometimes he's like, oh, I have my hands tied. I have to do this. But then he'll turn around and kind of throw it back in your face with a little bit of arrogance. So I think, weirdly enough, it's an earned arrogance because they are a super
Absolutely.
Conference. They are the most powerful conference in college sports, in college football. What bothers me about him, though, is that he is actively making things worse for other schools and
sure.
other conferences, and he's pretending as if he has to do it.
And to be fair, he's not
sometimes
the, he's
he acts
not,
like it's not happening.
And to be fair, he's not the unilateral decision
sure,
maker. He
sure.
just has a big voice in making college football and college athletics what we're sort of heading toward, which end goal, we'll see what that ultimately looks like. But to me, it just comes to – there comes a point where I think – everywhere outside of Columbus, Ohio, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and maybe instead, you know, looking at Penn State, right? Happy Valley. Everywhere outside of those places, everyone knows that you're the best conference in college football. And to consistently tell us about it, to me, I think is just bothersome. We know. I think most people recognize the SEC for what it is. To consistently get up there in this arrogant tone, knowing what we know about the decisions you've made behind the scenes to help warp what we view and what we see in college football today with conference realignment and everything else, it just, to me, is getting more bothersome every time he goes down that route. When you're the best, I don't need to hear about it all the time. You can give us some stats about your teams and how many national championships you've won, that's cool. But to say, yo, you're looking at a super conference. All those people that are wondering about a super conference, you're staring at it right now. Me here up at the podium. It's just too much. Too much, in my opinion. Now, among some of the things that are really the questions of SEC media and the questions of college football, it's the new college football playoff, which he has a big say in, as well as Tony Petitti with the Big Ten. And Greg Sankey made it clear in his opening remarks that Tony Petitti and he disagree on the college football playoff format going into 2026. It needs to be agreed upon by the end of the calendar year for it to actually go into action in 2026. Sankey said he and the Big Ten commissioner, Tony Petitti, spoke 4 out of 5 days last week and acknowledged the SEC's different view coming out of spring meetings. For those that have not kept up with this, the Big Ten and Tony Petitti, they want the 4-4-2-2-1 outlook on the college football playoff going into 2026, meaning that the SEC and the Big Ten would get 4 automatic qualifiers, the ACC and the Big 12 would get 2, and then the Group of 5 would get 1. Then you fill it out, the rest of the 16, 3 teams would be at largest. Now, Sankey and the SEC want 5 automatic qualifiers like we see with the 12-team playoff, but they want 11 at largest. They feel like that's the best opportunity for them to get the most teams in, and I understand that. And I honestly, if I know that I have told you on multiple occasions, I don't really care how this ends up because it's ultimately going to favor the Big Ten and the SEC. I do think that the 5-11 makes more sense in my mind. You have the inclusion that you set out to gain with the 12-team expansion, but at the same time, you do have meritocracy on the back end with 11 at-larges. Whoever's ranked highest gets in. I think that's relatively fair when we look at the SEC and the Big Ten and all the power conferences. But when he said the Big Ten has a different view, here's what he had to say. That's fine. We have a 12-team playoff, five conference champions. That can stay if we can't agree. Now, to me, my first reaction when I saw that, staying with the 12-team playoff after all this talk about expanding to 16 and making more money and getting more inclusion, seems like a huge bluff to me. Massive bluff and a power move. Greg Sankey has power. He's trying to flex it using the media. Standing in front of the press, he says, we can stay at 12. If Tony Petitti doesn't want to come along, don't want to agree, we can stay at 12. I'm not moving off my position. He can move off his position if he feels inclined to do so, but if not, we can stay at 12. I think it's a huge bluff and a power move from Greg Sankey. But also, speaking out of both sides of my mouth to a certain extent here, I do believe that Greg Sankey does mean that. If the Big Ten does not want to bend the knee to the SEC, he is fully planning on sticking with 12 teams and saying, okay, we don't need that extra money necessarily. We want it. We absolutely want it. But if you don't want to, you know, get with the program, here we are. Because I do believe, if you've read up on the ACC and the Big 12, they like the five automatic qualifier, 11 at large sort of situation with the 2026 college football playoff, and the Big Ten is sort of standing on their own among the power conferences with wanting four automatic qualifiers. So I think that while Greg Sankey is, to a certain extent, trying to flex his muscles, maybe it's a big bluff, I do believe that if it came down to it and the Big Ten stayed the course with this 4-4-2-2-1 plan with three at-larges, I think we could see another couple of years of the 12-team playoff until the Big Ten decides to come to the SEC side.
I'd honestly love that. I'd love to see what the 12-team playoff looks like for a few more years because, as we have discussed, I do think that it had some issues last season. It feels like they have done a couple of things to address those issues, and I would like to see the 12-team playoff live for more than 2 years.
Right.
Like, let's give it more of a run to see how it works out. Now, if they do go to the 16 teams, I am fully with you. The 5-11 format seems the most reasonable. It seems the most fair. It seems to allow the most parity in college sports. And, you know, with the SEC, the 5-11 might be okay with them to some extent because they're saying, well, most of our teams would get in anyway instead of doing that. I'm going to be honest with you. I completely hate the other one. I hate it so much.
4-4-2-2-1.
I hate it because it feels like it's going to block out so many teams. It's not going to give people opportunity. The 5-11 at least gives other schools opportunity to get in.
If we get down to the bottom of my feelings, 5-11 versus 4-4-2-2-1, to me, the Big Ten is taking what I would call the easy way out, or a bit of a coward's way out, where they know they have four automatic qualifiers, so they don't have to deal with the sort of at-larges and their conference being as top-heavy as it is. How much sort of credit do they get for those middle-of-the-line wins, the Northwesterns of the world, the Iowas of the world, versus the SEC's South Carolina, the SEC's Ole Miss, the SEC's Tennessee? Right, like they look at that and they say, well, our conference top to bottom is not as good. I think the four automatic qualifiers are good for us. The SEC looks at it and they're saying, may the best man win. We have a lot of games on our schedule where we're going to get credit for no matter what. We are ultimately going to take our chances and leaving the automatic qualifiers on the, you know, on the periphery outside of this thing because we feel as if our conference is going to get plenty of teams in regardless. Because think about the three teams that were left out of the 12-team playoff that ultimately would have got in a 16-team playoff with the 5-11. The three teams that were left out that were basically 13, 14, and 15. Alabama, Ole Miss, South Carolina. He looks at that and he says, well, we would have a way better chance than any other conference at getting those sort of middle-of-the-line, you know, teams right there on the bubble in. The Big Ten doesn't have that same sort of talent because their bubble team's Illinois. Something like that, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa. I'll take my chances with South Carolina, Alabama, and Ole Miss over those particular teams. I get where the SEC is coming from, and I honestly respect it a little more than the Big Ten. The Big Ten's trying to make sure, protect their self-interest by getting those four out automatically.
The coward's way out. I don't hate that. What did you make of Sankey's comments about college athletics not being broken, but it is under stress?
Hard not to agree, but I think you're also putting it very lightly for a reason, because you're the one that's ultimately helped facilitate the decision.
We're all looking for the guy who did this.
Yes, like he's trying to let himself down easy because he knows he played a big part in where we're at right now.
Right.
With the College Sports Commission and the House settlement and everything else. So I don't think he's innately wrong. I do think he's putting it lightly to protect himself on the back end. Is that a fair way of putting it? What'd you think of it?
I think college athletics is in a vulnerable state right now. And the college athletics that a lot of us grew up falling in love with, every day that goes by, I recognize it less and less.
Yes.
And Sankey is one of the main perpetrators of that. He's one of the main reasons for that. It is not broken yet, but it feels like if we don't do something soon, it may be broken. It may be broken. Like the entire conversation about the Big Ten and the SEC and trying to leverage their schedules or trying to leverage a college football playoff or trying to leverage TV deals, it just feels gross because it does feel like we are heading toward a potential super, you know, two conferences breaking off and then the rest being there.
Right.
And I just hate the idea that it's even a possibility now.
Right. Because
we've already seen, you know, in the last few years, one of the historic conferences that we had that we grew up loving, the Pac-12, completely, it stopped existing. And now it's the zombie version of the Pac-12. Now that zombie version is one that Memphis may want to be in, but that's a different conversation. It's just, I don't like where we are. Because the college athletics that we grew up watching, there was something, the pageantry was still there. It still felt special. And now it feels more business. And
yes.
I don't like that as much. It feels too corporatized now.
Yes, because ultimately players are making money that was ultimately lining the pockets of multiple universities and conferences. And they have to make up the lost ground by cutting bigger business deals, making more money.
I want to be clear, though. I'm not laying this at the feet of the players. I don't think that the players making money is why it looks like this. I think conferences have maybe used that as an excuse to change some things.
I think the amount of revenue that most athletic departments are going to generate with the losses from the House settlement, the $20.5 million for a lot of these bigger-time schools, I think that means something. So they're trying to make up that ground somewhere else through TV revenue and everything else by expanding the playoff, making that type of money. I think that's where it ultimately stems from. But I ultimately think even if players weren't getting paid, they would still go down this road of being greedy and still trying to make the most money, because we were headed that way as much as we don't want to admit it, even in the 90s. If I'm being honest about stress versus broken, right, because those were the two words used. College football is under stress. It's not broken. I think it depends on who you're a fan of, what conference you follow most closely.
Right.
And ultimately what you want out of college football. If you're someone who's an SEC or a Big Ten power conference fan and you just want as many big time matchups as possible, you may say that we're heading to the promised land. You may think we're headed to the greatest possible iteration of college football we've ever seen. But if you're someone who graduated from the University of Memphis like me or like Connor, you would say we're losing a semblance of the entirety of college football. Where do the Memphises fit in? Where do the lower tier teams in this whole FBS organization fit into this thing? Also, I think there are innately some things that have been broken by the sort of new age of college football and college athletics. Realignment. We have broken down regional barriers like we've never seen before. Cal and Stanford are playing in the Atlantic Coastal Conference. They're playing on the East Coast. They're West Coast teams. Big Ten, same exact thing for the most part. You have a bunch of Midwestern schools, and you have Oregon and USC and Washington, teams like that involved. And when we look at some of those regional rivalries that have meant so much to us in the past, those are broken. They are. You look at Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State, Bedlam doesn't get played anymore. Right? Like there's so many things that we have lost that have been broken. But again, if we're giving a blanket statement on if college athletics or college football in particular are broken, I think it is so dependent upon where you're at, what team you favor, what conference you watch. So I don't think I can sit here and make a blanket statement that, you know, Greg Sankey's wrong or Greg Sankey's right, because I think it's in the eye of the beholder ultimately.
I think that you're right in that depending on what conference your team is in, like if you're a Big Ten or SEC fan, like I'm a Tennessee football fan, so I look at this and say, at the end of the day, Tennessee's going to be okay because they're going to be provided the most resources. The big-time matchups will be there. But at the same time, I love college football for college football. Like, it, pound for pound in this country, college football is probably at the top of the list with the NFL. It's
second behind the NFL.
It's a huge gap.
Look at the TV ratings. It is second behind the NFL.
I think that,
and it's only sped up with all the changes.
I think that very much like the NFL, like you have your NFL team, but watching the other games can be just as exciting. And I don't know, there's something gross about it still, okay, my team might be okay, but that doesn't mean I like what's going on or I agree with what's going on. Just because my school may benefit doesn't mean it's something that I'm okay with, because it's ruining the pageantry and the history of college athletics, and that's what I don't like. Like, we talk about all the time that it feels like the world is changing and it's not the same as it used to be, and money now matters more than anything, and corporatization and minimalism, all that stuff is things that we don't like, and just everything seems to be heading toward that direction. And now it feels like it's beginning to bleed into sports. And even though Tennessee football might ultimately benefit from it,
right,
I still hate it. I hate it because of what it's doing to college athletics as a whole, because turning on your television and just watching college football all day on a Saturday, no matter what the teams are, is part of the love for the game. It's finding these Cinderella schools or finding these players that you can fall in love with. Like a few years ago, like Coastal Carolina became one of my favorite schools to watch. They were an absolute darling. And now it just feels like every year that goes by, every day that goes by, the possibilities of that become less and less. And that is something that I will mourn, even if Tennessee ends up benefiting from it ultimately. And yes, like, I'm a graduate of Memphis. I still love Memphis football. Like, Memphis football is easily my number two. Not even, and sometimes, to be honest, sometimes it is my number one, depending on the weeks and matchups. So it just feels like, okay, we might be benefiting from it, but like, are we the bad guys? And like, we absolutely are the bad guys.
Yes. But to his point, if we're just going off what he said, college football is under stress, I couldn't agree more. Or college athletics are under stress, I couldn't agree more.
It's bending.
It
hasn't broken yet, but it's certainly bending.
I'm just so curious. Like, the House settlement was this big thing that we were waiting to pass. It was going to solve some problems. We knew if you were paying attention, it wasn't going to solve all the problems, but it's going to solve some of these issues. I don't see any of these issues solved. I think we have more steps. I think what the House settlement has really done, at least for the student athlete, there's just more steps to getting the money that you were already receiving. The revenue sharing, we'll see how that works out. I don't have any take on that, but seeing what's happening with name, image, and likeness money, which is still legal, and the collectives that were ultimately funding programs, it is hard for me to watch right now. It's tough to see because I don't know how that figures itself out. You have a college sports commission whose only job, seemingly, is to scrutinize NIL deals and to render, if I'm being honest, if what I think their ultimate goal is, it's to render NIL collectives useless, because you have to have a valid business plan or a valid business reason as to why you're making these NIL deals. Well, they've denied NIL deals, and you know what that's going to do? Cause more stress for the entirety of college football and college athletics writ large, because now you're going to have more lawsuits, more settlements, more money being paid out. Billable hours remain undefeated for institutions and for agents and players behind the scenes. So I just feel like, sure, there's a bunch of stress, but all the fixes that we thought would come with the House settlement, that we thought would be sort of at least under wraps, figured out, we'd have unanimous agreed upon ideas when it came to NIL and how we're paying players, it feels like we've just added more steps and more litigation, more lawsuits, more stress than what we had previously, weirdly enough. I still stand by the idea that something needed to happen. You needed to have some type of intervention from the federal government, from the courts.
Right.
But this is so far from a solution and so far from any semblance of normal than I think we've really ever been in college football and college athletics.
Now, let's finish this on something positive about the SEC.
Okay.
The Netflix series trailer, yeah. SEC football any given Saturday, looks pretty sick.
I'm hyped up. Is it going to follow every single – that's the question I have. Follow every single program?
I don't know. It's so.
Or is it just going to follow the Alabama, trailer, Georgia?
So in the trailer, you get a lot of Vanderbilt, a lot of Florida, and a lot of LSU. They were in the trailer a whole bunch. So I wonder if maybe they're going to pick specific schools that gave them the most access. But all I know is that the people that were behind Drive to Survive are behind this. So I'm going into it trusting the hands that made it.
Know what I'm very curious about is...
The Netflix sports stuff has been really good.
Yes. I'm curious about a lot of things. About the inner workings of the Alabama program with Kalen DeBoer. And, you know, the Nico Iamaleava situation. How Tennessee is going to respond to that throughout the season. Know what I'm really curious about, though? The day-to-day conversation behind the scenes when it comes to money among the athletes.
Oh.
I want to see if we can like get like...
between athletes?
Yeah, I want to see if we can get sort of an inside look at that. Because I played recently, I fully understand that, but those conversations were never a part of my day-to-day. So I don't really have a full understanding of how these guys are getting paid out, what the conversations are like behind the scenes, is there negotiating, are the agents involved on a consistent basis? I'm very curious to see if the Netflix, you know, the producers, the people that are filming all this, if they get a glimpse of that. I don't know about you. That's something I've always been very curious about since the NIL world took off.
I would love to see it. I have doubts that will be in there.
No one wants that.
Yeah.
Well, I think fans are very curious about it.
I think fans are curious.
I bet institutions and people that are giving the access feel like that's a bad look for them and their organization.
I also do wonder if there's something about the privacy for the players still probably matters and having 18 to 22 year olds discussing.
I mean, you don't have to literally put
out numbers. No, not put out, but just discussing it. You know, it's. I wonder if that might just be a bit odd to be showing. I had to guess, it's going to be more about like,
yes,
we're working hard. Yeah.
Strictly that, though, doesn't that feel like just straight up puff piece?
So here's the thing. Some Netflix
things have
been puff pieces.
I want to see the gross. I want to see the nasty. I want to see the good. I want to see the bad. I want to see the ugly.
I don't mind certain sports documentaries or inside looks being puff pieces for, like, if you're looking at the SEC as a whole, of course it's going to be a puff piece. I don't want to see, you know, I want to see the exciting things. I want to see the things that get you fired up. I'm not going into this wanting to hear about Vanderbilt struggling in the SEC because they're having to compete against. I don't care. I want to see the exciting things. Tell me about how they get ready for big games. Show me Vanderbilt beating Alabama, how big of a deal that was. Show me Tennessee. Like, the negotiations about Nico with Tennessee could be fascinating. That's the type of stuff I want to see.
That's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, less like players talking about, like, I got paid $100,000.
And maybe I need to change it. Like, the Nico situation is a great thing to pull from of what I want to see. I want to see the Nico situation. You're not going to see, like, the full-on negotiation back and forth and him strong-arming the staff. I don't think you're going to see all that. But I want to see, like, the reaction from teammates and people like that when it comes to Nico getting into the portal. Nico asking for $4 million per year. How does that affect the inner workings of that locker room?
I will say the poster for SEC football any given Saturday is interesting because four of the prominent names on there are Nussmeier, Lagway, Sellers, and Pavia.
Yes, and then you have Cam Coleman from Auburn.
Right.
Which I'm interested in as well.
So. I guess.
We'll see. Well, he's going to...
Who do you think's the most boring team? Auburn's kind of boring. If you feel a little bit boring.
Well, Hugh will find a way to make it unboring. Hopefully they show his golf, by the way. I mean,
is it like Oklahoma?
Isn't Kentucky just innately pretty boring?
Yeah, Kentucky.
They never have true 1A awesome SEC talent.
Yeah,
and then Mark Stoops is kind of a good coach, and I respect the job he's done at Kentucky. Kind of a stick in the mud when it comes to, like, actually, you know, getting with the media, giving quotes, giving full access. I think Kentucky would fit the most boring category, one I don't really want to see.
Yeah, State would be probably, just because of the season that they had.
Yeah, they stunk. Yeah. But also, I think there's something to be said about, like, an SEC team going 2-10.
Oh, you're talking the drama of it?
Yeah, the drama, and Jeff Lebby in year two, like, fighting his ass off to try to get something out of the portal to help him, you know, recover from a 2-10 season in year one.
You know what I want to see?
There's drama in that.
I want them to have footage of Kirby Smart getting a phone call about yet another player getting into a road incident. Just the look on his face. I would like to see it.
Okay, of all the things that won't be shown.
It's definitely that. That might be the number one thing. Will not be shown under any circumstances. It would be very funny if in all the Alabama footage, you just see, like, in the background, you just see, like, Saban, like, Michael Myers, just, like, peeping around corners and stuff. Like, he just gets closer and closer every single time they cut to DeMar. when they're losing, Vanderbilt, he's just getting closer and closer to him.
Speaking of which, we're going to have to talk about that later in the Blitz. Greg McElroy, his former quarterback, says he's heard it on good authority that Nick Saban wants to return to coaching.
Interesting.
Give me a quick take, real quick, before we get there.
I mean, I love Nick Saban. I just don't know where he would go.
I don't know how it
makes
sense.
That's my thing, is where is he going?
And also, who is McElroy hearing that from?
Maybe Saban.
If he heard it could be Saban himself. A former assistant of Saban, maybe. If he heard it from our guy in town here, if he heard it from our guys at CAA, and from Jimmy, maybe that would move me. But I don't see that being a thing. I just don't know where he would go. We'll talk about it more in the Blitz, though. Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We'll come back. We have some NBA to talk about. The Grizzlies made some moves over the weekend. And there's a certain team who I've been watching throughout Summer League, and they're a couple of rookies that they drafted in the first round. They terrify me. And the Grizzlies play them four times a year. We'll talk about that next. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. We had some Summer League over the weekend. And Connor, not after one game, I'll fully admit it. After two games, Cooper Flagg, Mavs' number one overall pick, has been shut down for the rest of Summer League. Just two games is all it took. And this second game was pretty damn impressive. 31 points, 10 for 21 from the field. I think he was only 1 for 5 from 3, but regardless, 31 points in that game. And the Spurs only scored 69. They only scored 69 points. So he played pretty well, but he shut down after two games. I feel as if I'm still correct on my assumption that if in the first game he did the same thing, he probably would have been shut down. They were just waiting to see if he could pop on the offensive end. Then they were letting him sit till the preseason, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I have been interested in that. It seems like they were encouraging him to take as many shots as possible because, again, he just was not the type of shooter he was at Duke that he has shown in Summer League. Like, taking 20-plus shots in two straight games is not how Cooper Flagg will be playing in the NBA. But it was interesting to see what he was able to do when he takes that volume of shots. I mean, 31 points, 4 rebounds, it's a pretty good game.
Yeah.
Not bad.
And still
showed things defensively.
I was going to say, 31 points, though, in a game where he only scored 69. They ended up losing still.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the team was bad. Ryan Nembhard, man.
He had a good game one with 21 points. Game two, not so much. But I still stand by drafting Nembhard. They tend to pan out.
We can talk about Musa?
Yeah. You talk about Musa. I'll let you take it.
Just bad. Just really bad.
Can I ask you this, though? And this is with all the respect due in the world to Musa Cisse, who is a good college player.
Yep.
I don't think a great college player, really good on the defensive end.
Good college player.
Did you expect anything different?
I did not.
That's my thing. Like, I can see Musa Cisse, if he would ever carve out a role in the pros, in the NBA, G League, whatever, I could see him being like the defensive specialist, big, blocking shots, that type of thing. But there's too many things.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
He's below average at.
Correct.
Offensively, across the board, below average. And personally, this is just something I noticed from watching him throughout his college career. He's got all the natural ability and athletic ability to be a good rebounder. And he tries to put bodies on people, like his body on people. He's just not an overly good rebounder. On the defensive, offensive, just not that great at it. So it's like it's hard for me to imagine with the skill set he possesses really making his way in the G League or the NBA.
He struggles with maintaining position against bigger bodies in the G League or in the summer league so far. You know, he was okay defensively, like he made a couple of plays, but I think that he really struggles to figure out how to position himself and to be in the right spots at the right time. His reads off the backboard and off the rim have not been very good.
Yeah, and that does not mean that all Tigers players are struggling.
No,
because they're playing really well.
Two of them are hooping.
David Jones Garcia, he had another 21-point, 8-for-15, 5-rebound, 5-assist performance. And he's just looking comfortable out there with the Spurs. I don't know how he's going to break through with a team like the Spurs. A two-way guy, maybe. That's sort of how it has to be. But he's doing a really good job facilitating and creating for that summer league team. I just don't – again, we have this conversation every time his name comes up. He's such a tweener. He's not tall enough to be like some three that you let be some offensive juggernaut off the bench. He's also not – you know, the perfect skill set to be a combo guard in the NBA. So it's, again, it's just for him, it's about skill set, size, all those things coming together. How does it look? His ideal role in the NBA, what is that? That's the question that we have asked since he came out of Memphis.
Right. And it has been interesting because he has shown more of a playmaking ability throughout summer league so far, but it is still coming with a high turnover rate. Like, he had 5 assists in that game, which is great, but he had 6 turnovers. And that is kind of the rub when it comes to David Jones Garcia, is that he can make plays, but he is also going to turn the ball over at a high level, but he is also going to score. My hope for David Jones Garcia, because we can be honest about it, the San Antonio Spurs, they just don't have any room for him. They don't have any need for him. Maybe, though, his performance in the summer league,
it's about getting filmed,
catches the eye of another team, and they decide to bring him on in a two-way, and they may be able to give him a shot. A team that doesn't expect to win many basketball games, maybe he can find a place there. He's had a really good summer league. He has shown improvements. There are just some things he needs to continue to tweak, but his defense and his playmaking have gotten a little bit better, but the turnovers are still there, but he can score at a high level, so maybe a team takes a chance on him.
Yeah, and then Naquan Tomlin, another 22-point
just awesome
performance.
Just awesome.
9-for-12 from the field, 13 rebounds, 13, 4 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. And, like, with him, it has always been this way. We highlighted it yesterday. But he's just a guy who has the height, the shooting ability, the offensive ability to be a stretch big in this league. I don't know if he can fit in exactly with the Cavs. I don't see why not, necessarily. But he can guard the 3 and 4 well. He can rebound at a pretty high level, depending on the situation. He can score at all three levels. Check, check, check. And then, defensively, do I want to see him be able to body up with some of those bigs a little bit better? Sure. But I don't know if he ever gets to the NBA if that's what he's going to be asked to do. It just doesn't seem like something that fits his skill set. He's going to be out on the perimeter a whole lot as a big.
Yeah, he's really shown his athletic ability in the summer league. His activity rebounding the basketball has been better than expected, too.
Yep, 100%.
13 rebounds in a game.
All right.
Not easy to do.
Now, before I get to the team that scares the hell out of me, and they've been scaring the hell out of me for a couple of years with high picks and a bunch of young talent that's stepping into their own, Jace Richardson, first-round pick from the Orlando Magic, through his first two summer league games, 33 points, 10 for 18 from the field, 3 for 6 from 3, 5 assists, 2 turnovers. He was a plus 14 in 47 minutes. And then last night versus Toronto, 19 points, 4 assists, 8 for 9 from the free throw line, 50% from the field, 24 minutes. He's been really good. But what sticks out to me, and Parker Fleming had to put me on this, he looks identical to Mike Conley. And he was a Big Ten player. Let's remember that. Big Ten player coming in. Relatively undersized point guard, and he's lefty. He wears number 11 in summer league. And listen, Mike Conley, when he came in, I think people, most people remember, he's not a finished product. He needed a couple of years to really get going. Like he was a first round pick that was for the first couple of years unanimously crapped upon, but you saw what he became. But Jace Richardson, I don't know if you've been seeing those comps. It's almost identical. Like, the parallels are getting scary.
They are getting scary. I will say, I think that Mike's defensive ability was better than Jace Richardson's by a good little bit of margin there. But I understand it. Lefty, number 11. He plays at his own pace, which I really like. He takes care of the basketball, and he can knock down a three. Like, that is
he looks comfortable
the archetype
on ball
of player. When you watch him, you think, oh, yeah, that's Mike Conley.
Relatively undersized point guard, has a decent three ball, and just takes care of the basketball when
right
out there.
Like, he's going to be really good. I love the fit with Orlando, too.
They need a point guard that has that type of skill set.
Yeah. Well, now
I don't think he'll be that in year one, but I think down the road with the core that they've already built with now they have Bane, Franz, Paolo, I think he could really grow into
they
something.
They have a now really good rotation of point guards. You've got Jalen Suggs, you have Tyus Jones, and now Jace Richardson. Really good.
Yes. And Tyus Jones seems to be the type of vet going into the future that a lot of teams are just going to want on their
100%
on their bench, not for just his play, but Tyus Jones is a great point guard to learn from, I'd imagine.
Without a doubt. Yeah, like quite literally the best assist to turnover guy you could have in the NBA.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that seems like a Jace Richardson signing just as much as it is for him to be a really good piece off the bench for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to the Spurs, San Antonio Spurs. Dylan Harper's great already.
Dude, so good.
He's really
good. He's so good.
So, like, I look at their roster and I see De'Aaron Fox and him at the point guard position, combo guard type thing, and I'm just, like, wondering how that's going to work. But also, I do get the sense that they could figure that out. Both those guys have more than enough at their disposal to make something happen, even in the rookie year for Dylan Harper. But you know who scares me more? Even though offensively he's looked pretty brutal, Carter Bryant. Carter Bryant is a guy who has the ability going forward to develop on the offensive end. He's got a lot of things at his disposal there. He can put the ball on the ground. He's got at least a semblance of a shooting stroke that looks good. But defensively, he's an absolute menace, Connor. I have seen him in watching him through, what, three games now with the Spurs in Vegas? He guards 2 through 5. Relatively comfortably. Now, I understand that summer league competition he's playing against, but this guy can go block shots at the rim. He can recover with the best of them. He can play on the perimeter. And the Spurs adding a defensive type ace, a guy who gives them, you know, flexibility with their rotations. He is the type of player that in a couple of years we could be looking up and terrified of. I'm not going to go full like Amen Thompson with the Rockets. Not going to do that yet, but I think that there's something there. And for the Spurs, with Victor Wembanyama already, with Stephon Castle winning Rookie of the Year, Dylan Harper added to the fold, De'Aaron Fox is still there. This Spurs team, and I don't know if it's next year, although it's possible.
I think they're going to be really good.
They're going to be really good. I just think in 2 or 3 years, we're looking at a championship-caliber team. Very much the leaps that these young guys could take could really put us in a scary situation.
Yeah, Carter Bryant looks like an exciting defensive player who has a lot of work to do on the offensive end. But really the Spurs would only need to deploy him as a defensive stopper. They have enough offense around him with De'Aaron Fox, Dylan Harper. He's shown an offensive ability. Devin Vassell is kind of the forgotten guy on the Spurs. He's
damn
awesome.
Good player.
A really good player. They still have Harrison Barnes, and then Victor Wembanyama got cleared today from the blood clots. That's great news if you're a basketball fan. The NBA is just better when you have a player like Victor Wembanyama in the fold. And then Stephon Castle, you still got Keldon Johnson there. Luke Kornet signed there. They are one of those teams that is on the way. And we could look up in 2 years and be saying, could this be the year that the Spurs end up making it to a Western Conference Finals? Because Victor Wembanyama, you just only expect him to get better every single season. Defensive Player of the Year is probably on the way if he hits the game's played marker. The Spurs are in such a good spot, too, because they have all of this talent, but they also have cap space, and they could trade for a bigger fish if need be.
Yes.
Because a guy like De'Aaron Fox, they might look at him and say, well, we have Stephon Castle and we have Dylan Harper. We don't need De'Aaron Fox. Let's use De'Aaron Fox to go get somebody else and, you know, throw in somebody like Jeremy Sochan or throw in Carter Bryant if you need to. They are in such a good spot right now, and it is terrifying to think about what the Spurs could be in the future because they have just nailed draft pick over draft pick over draft pick the last few seasons.
And what's interesting about like
now it's easy to nail
Victor Dylan Harper, number two. That
yeah,
is
but Stephon Castle like but, bullseyed it.
The bigger fish conversation with the Spurs is so it's got to be a nuanced conversation, right? Because you seemingly have your number 1A. You have your one. You have Victor Wembanyama. But, like, how does he – can he stay on the floor on a consistent basis? Are the injury concerns scary? What he dealt with blood clots is something that could be recurring. You hope not. Hopefully he's got the, you know, medications and everything he needs to keep that from happening again. But you have your number one. It's like if you're going to go big – go find a big fish to pair with this roster, one, it has to fit the timeline, and two, you have to decide upon yourself you don't have enough. And – to me, with all these draft picks that they've gotten the past 3 years, I think they have enough to just build on slowly. Like, this is should not be surprising because it is the Spurs. They're one of the most well-run organizations in the National Basketball Association. This is the definition to me of a rebuild done right. They haven't put too much pressure on the back of any of these guys yet. That's coming, though. That's coming, and we'll see how they respond.
Well, they're in that sweet spot, too, where any number of wins that's better than last season is going to be a celebration within the fan base. There's no real expectations yet. You have a very exciting young player. They're like the Grizzlies in like Ja's first 2 or 3 seasons. That's what they feel like right now. And next year, I think that they're going to be a playoff team. I really do. They have so much talent down there. And if Wemby can give you 65, 70 games, they're going to win a lot. And the good thing about Wembanyama is he's the type of player you could put really anybody around him, and he's going to be able to figure out how to play with that basketball player. I'm going to be really curious to see how De'Aaron Fox and Wembanyama actually work as a pairing this season.
And also, I'm curious the Mitch Johnson era now beginning. Greg Popovich out the door. He ain't walking back through that door. He's going to be sort of the higher personnel decision maker for them. I wonder how that plays a part in sort of how this team grows and builds. But having Greg Popovich still part of that organization should help pretty drastically.
But dude, that Carter Bryant highlight where he blocks that alley-oop is just insane. He gets from the perimeter to the rim so fast.
There was one clip, he's covering a two-guard. Two-guard beats him off the dribble. I forget who it was for the Spurs at that moment, but he steps up. Carter Bryant recovers completely, blocks him off the backboard. He has looked terrible offensively. I want to make that clear. But the defensive highlights, that's where you need to begin. If you're a young player really trying to make it and you're that young, I want to see you play defense and give effort first before I worry about how you're going to fit in offensively. Because he is 6'9", athletic as hell, can put the ball on the ground.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
That's decent handles for his size. I think that the offense can come along, right? It's just going to be a slow burn. But the defense being there off the top is something you need to pay attention with these young players. If they're giving that effort, if they're showing some defensive upside, it could get scary. Because I think Amon Thompson's a good example of that with the Rockets, right? Where from day one, you knew defensively he was going to be there. And then offensively, by year two, look where he's at. Look where he's at, 14.5 points per game last year. Is that right? So we'll see. We'll see. Hour number two is on the way. We'll open it talking some SEC media days that have begun. Some Greg Sankey. We'll bring on David Cobb from CBS Sports.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium, for instance. If you lose track of your friends, after a long seventh-inning stretch, one quick message and a shared location later, you'll find each other without missing the next pitch. And you can upload the video of the game-winning hit and share it before you even leave your seat. And on the days you can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data of national speed score results for the second half of 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of the speed test intelligence data for the second half of 2025.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam. I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.